Hello and welcome to How Green Is Your Deal, a podcast about Europe's path to climate neutrality. This podcast is part of Green Deal Net, a Jean Monnet network that brings together research and teaching on EU climate and sustainability governance. In this episode, we are going to talk about environmental movements in Central and Eastern Europe. And for this, we have today not one, but two guests. With me, I have Aaron Buzogani, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Natural Resources and Applied Life Science in Vienna, and Sabina Kereni, a researcher at the Hungarian Academy of Science, the Center of Social Sciences. Each an expert on their own topics, they have recently collaborated on environmental activism in Hungary, for which they also have published a paper on the topic in environmental politics. So hi, Aaron and Sabina. I think it's so cool that you can be here today on the podcast. As I just mentioned, you have recently worked on activism in Central and Eastern Europe, specifically Hungary. Can you tell a little bit more what has inspired you to work on the topic?
Thank you for the invitation. It's always a pleasure to have an interest in Central and Eastern Europe. To talk a little bit about my background, I started off as an activist myself. We founded with a couple of friends an organization called Green Roots, Zöld Fiatalok. That was back in the early millennium. We organized protests and we went to different events and started a network with other green organizations in Europe. And after a while, I started working on, I was really interested in how movements work and what they can reach and how they organize themselves and what kind of connections they can establish with the government. So I started studying movements as a researcher, which is not unique because this is a path of of many scholars of social movements that they have an activist background. And since in the last couple of years, I've been working on movements as a researcher. And in this particular topic that we have worked on with Aaron, one of the field works that we did with my colleague in Budapest, Gergely Ott, our co-author, it is the city park which affects many people in Budapest because it is a huge park out of the very few green areas. And it affects different types of groups. And we also used to go there, or we go there with my friends to play football. And so everybody is affected in one way or another. So we started interviewing people there. So this is the brief history.
It's so cool that you can combine your activist part with and now your research as well.
Absolutely.
And really have this personal connection, you know, like, I think that's always very valuable. And what about you, Aaron? Why did you choose this topic?
So thanks, Jana. Thanks for inviting us. So my background is a bit different, though I'm also basically worked on very similar issues like Sabina, and we know each other for really many, many years. Basically, in a way, also from the time when I did my PhD, which was in the end not really about social movements, but it was about implementation and compliance with EU environmental law in Eastern Europe. And I was always somehow hanging out with these people whom I interviewed, I was really interested in these social movements. And I basically also had this track in my PhD to do something like more academic on this. But then in the PhD, it never really came out like this, so it was more like a sort of an EU thing. But I sort of had this idea that this is an interesting topic, and I followed that basically more from the outside for a long time. And then when we were planning this special issue with Adam Fagan, then I basically I don't even remember how this happened. So we just talked with Sabina about this, and thought like this would be in a way really interesting to combine some of the basically our also our older research on this topic, on like me more coming from this EU and basically NGOs, civil society, social movements thing, and at that time Sabina was also working not only on basically playing football at this place, but also had this project which was in a way writing the history of Hungarian social movements in the 80s, and we thought that this would be a nice thing to look at this in a historical perspective.
Yeah, for sure. I think for maybe if there's PhD students that are listening to this as well, it must be nice to know that all these ideas you have when you're doing your PhD, even sometime later, you can still go back to them and revisit them and publish something on it together. I think that's also super cool. So as you said, you worked a bit on environmental movements, both from your personal perspectives or also more academic ones. Can you tell a little bit more about what exactly are environmental movements? Like, what are some of the characteristics? How should we understand them?
So I think after the regime change, there have been many similar features in the development of environmental movements in this region. One of them, which is very important, that a civil society had to be created from the top, which is not how they developed otherwise in Western Europe or in the United States. So it was a result of a project and a lot of support from Western Europe and from the US, which involved a lot of funds, which have helped to establish the civil society and among them environmental movement in the region. The environmental sector has been always very strong in Hungary, like a lot of organizations, a very strong network, a lot of communication, a lot of consultations on a professional level. Also, another important point, I think, in the history is the accession to the EU, which has changed a bit of the funding and also affected the way these organizations operated, which is on the one hand the change of the change from the American funding to the EU type of funding, which was more project based, and as a result of that there have been a lot of organizations and a lot of projects but more short-lived and with a bigger fluctuation. But what is also very common for environmental movement in the region is the scarce resources. So there is a very big competition for resources. And also after 2010, many countries have been affected by illiberalism and democratic backlash, which has, of course, also affected the environmental sector very heavily. So this scarce competition, which existed earlier, exposed them more to all these changes that came with the liberal turn after around 2010, which happened in Hungary, in Poland, and other countries too. So I can talk more in detail about Hungary, that all these institutions that were weak, but they at least existed, all the channels of consultation that involved professionals in the civil society, and that all these professionals that were involved in the decision making, these channels stopped to exist. Another important turn, which is very important in the history of environmental movements in Hungary, was that around 2014-15, the Norwegian funds for civil society were also stopped for political reasons, which sharpened this competition for resources. And as a result, started these tendencies that we talk about a little bit in the paper, the grassrootization and a bit of the change in the scene, which is did not only happen in Hungary, but also in other countries in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, so we basically there was like the civil society in Hungary and in Eastern Europe was mainly then created top down and was heavily reliant on external funding or the political context. And with that kind of, when that kind of changed and funding fell away or the political context shifted, that also forced them to, I don't know, move in a different way or create different types of organizations.
Maybe it's important also to have like a more historical approach in why also about the differences. So it's not only about like what happened after 2010, I mean, which is obviously relevant, but as Sabina has said, many of the issues were already quite problematic before, and I think it's also important for listeners to understand that basically the Central and Eastern European environmental movement and environmentalism as such comes basically from a very different story than Western European environmentalism comes from, and this is this perhaps explains also the different voices. In the 80s we had strong protests against the socialist state, which was a socialist state, and environmentalism basically had its main war against this state. So this explains, as we say also in this paper, that it's not necessarily a radical left wing movement. So it's much more complex. So basically, in the 80s, we had this huge protests. In at least in Hungary, but also in Bulgaria and other countries, basically protesting against the state socialist states, big industrialization projects. In Hungary, it was against a dam on the Danube, which was seen to be very very problematic. So it was a Czechoslovak and Hungarian project, and basically this was the moment where the modern environmental movement grew up in Hungary, also with a lot of help from Austria and other countries. This was something which really very effectively brought together all kinds of opposition to the regime. So environmentalism was basically a bracket which could bring together those actors who after 90 really found themselves on very different parts of the political spectrum. So there were of course some conservatives, but also somehow critical socialists. There were nationalists, even fascists, who basically all came together saying that, yeah, this is our environment, and this evil government wants to destroy the nature, wants to destroy the Danube, which has anyway like a very, very important role in Hungarian identity, historiography, and all that. And I think this is basically to see this genetical part of where the environmental movement comes from in Hungary is also very important, because it helps us explaining still some of the cleavages which still exist, and it helps us explaining why basically this elite NGOization which happened in the 90s was not really taken up by everybody. So many remained very critical of it, exactly because of those developments Sabina was describing. Basically, this NGO sector being strongly dependent on first US, then later EU money, and this was very very different to what basically many people who were part of that movement thought that it should work like.
Yeah, that's also what it always makes very interesting to go so deep into, well, not so deep, but like look back beyond like the more recent past to really then understand the patterns or where things come from, or then now indeed get the different perspectives about this top-down funding and everything. So thanks a lot for that. That's super interesting. So as you then now kind of mentioned that before, environmental activism was also used as like a protest voice against the government at the time. As Sabina mentioned, there has been a bit of democratic backsliding in the region, in Hungary and in Poland. Do you feel that now again, environmental movements and environmental activism can take this role?
This is a very interesting question, and many researchers and journalists have been asking because the parallels are there. And indeed, as Aaron said, it is really important that the Danube movement, it was not the reason why the communist regime went down, but it was in an important place at an important moment. And it gathered activists and groups from all kinds of backgrounds. And what united them is that they wanted to overthrow the regime. I think it would be a little bit optimistic to expect the same at this moment. And also, like in the region, there are a lot of mobilizations, a lot of protests where environmentalists protest against the government. So it happened in Bulgaria, it happened in many other places, or in Romania, that the environmental protests were somehow intertwined with anti-government sentiments. But the nature of the protests and the mobilizations and the organization is quite different. I would like to mention this example that I referred to before, this mobilization against the city park, where the issue did indeed unite nature conservationists who just wanted to keep the park. It reunited local people who were affected by the gentrification of the area, and they were also not in, they also opposed the idea of building huge building complexes into the city park. It affected people who walked their dogs there, people who went there for jogging, so people from all kinds of backgrounds, and also those who were opposing these policies of the government. But on the other hand, in this climate that has been created in the past couple of years, the society has been very polarized, and the whole political arena is very polarized, which led to kind of phenomenon that the activists are very worried about the cleanness of the issue and of the representation of the issue. So while they were fighting for the city park, they were also trying to make sure that they don't have any connections that could corrupt them or put shed a bad light on them. They really wanted to avoid the impression that they would be supported by, for example, the Socialist Party or the party that has followed the Socialist Party, Gyurcsány Ferenc. So it resulted in an isolation of the activists. And what is really important in environmental mobilizations is that protest activists have important ties and would be able to build networks also outside the movement. So this isolation led to the fact that they could not really establish good connections within the country. They were also split among each other, and the initial demonstrations led to two or three rival groups, which were all against the building of different building complexes of the city park. But they did not communicate with each other. And the reason for that was that one of the groups wanted the support of the opposition parties, and the other group was afraid that if they involved corrupt political parties, then they would lose supporters from the outside. So this polarized political environment makes networking really difficult.
Yeah, I think this is a really important point where you mentioned that this like very much like in the 80s, so in all of the region, basically, these environmental protests are becoming not only protests about environment, but they are essentially protests about democracy. They are protests about transparency. In a way, they also protest for the rule of law and sort of, you know, if you're talking about environmental impact assessment, for example, this has immediate implications for how the state should run, who should be made accountable, and so on. And we see this big hope really overall in the region. So most recently, probably in Serbia, where there is this lithium mine issue, which basically has really is closely related to the green, to European Green Deal, because we need to get somewhere the lithium, and we don't want to have it from China. So yes, but of course that that really results in local conflicts, which are then framed very much in the sense of you know, this is about democracy, and Romania has seen much stronger basically than Hungary in the last years, protests against gold mining, against illegal logging, and so on. So these are very often big hopes, we would say. And even if we go further out to Georgia, where I'm doing now research, we have very similar big hopes put in this transnationalization and also in domestic mobilization around environmental issues. But even there, probably we must say that it's their hope shouldn't be too big that this will really change everything. But of course, this is nevertheless still important that it fosters coalitions. It brings together, at least for a moment, people from really very different walks of life, and that is already something which is which I think it's very important for building civil society. Whether the civil society immediately will, you know, have an effect on political majorities or so on, that's really not. I don't really think that there is much evidence for that, but.
Yeah, I would just like to add something to that. That it was one of our findings here that, in fact, there is no direct repression here of environmental movements. There are different kind of strategies. So the way the movement responds to these political conditions is that there are new types of strategies arising from the movement, and it is less towards mass protests, which are not very typical for Hungary. But what we could observe is the rise of local issues, of this so-called NIMBY, not in my backyard. So we have seen the rise of a lot of these NIMBYs in Hungary, that local people organize themselves and they involve not necessarily only people from the activist scene, but even like local residents.
So basically how I understand it is that these environmental movements or these environmental causes are mainly a way for bringing people together from different spaces, but then still, depending on the political context, it might be difficult for that to then translate really into a wider political or democratic change. Yeah, so then of course when we think about climate activism or environmental activism, I think what comes to a lot of people's minds is the protests we had from the Climate Youth and Greta Thunberg, of course. Is this something that also took place in Eastern and Central Europe, or are they really two separate things?
These protests took place also here. So we could see young people protesting, and a big achievement of this movement was that young people were like an age group that was previously not involved in active politics was present in these mobilizations, and we could see them in the protests. But you also have to add to that it was mostly young people from the good high schools. So there have been several researches on these protests. And on the one hand, it is really a big achievement that it could involve all these young people. But on the other hand, they could not really mobilize young people from backwarded regions. I would say that their presence is not directly channeled into the environmental movement, but there is a general rise of the awareness of environmental issues and climate issues. So they have infiltrated everywhere.
I mean, this relationship between Western environmental movements and or what we think of as Western environmental movements and basically Eastern European environmental movements. And an important feature is that basically both in research but also happening concretely is that much was basically copied and happened through isomorphism or learning. So basically this ends up with the story that like a lot of intellectual or movement fashions, of course, at some point trickle down and end up in other parts of the world. So there is a class bias in environmentalism, and this tends to be probably the case also for climate issues. So climate use mobilization, which is something we see basically not only in Hungary, that I'm working in Vienna and there as well. It's pretty obvious where the people, most of them are coming. Basically, we have these two different types of activism. And one is what we seem to know from basically those Western European examples of the basically 70s, 80s, is this Engelhardtian post-materialist idea of, you know, like the people are getting richer at some point, and while their grandparents, they were, you know, fighting wars and building up countries afterwards, they basically, at some point, the next generation accumulated enough capital to take care of other issues. So, and this was basically freedom, peace, feminist issues, and also environment. But there is another perspective on where environmentalism can come from, and this comes from the global south. And this is the concept of environmentalism of the poor. Actually, we were not really attentive to these trends in Eastern Europe for a long time. But basically, I think by now we have this happening as well. So there is an environmentalism which is not really having this upper crust accent, but it's more about taking care about livelihoods. It's more about being effectively affected by what is happening, and this is basically those NIMBY issues, which sound terrible for some, but they are really affecting people living there. And this is about now building accumulator factories in Hungary, so where people are seeing that, you know, like their neighborhood is affected, and this is perhaps a different type of environment is emerging.
I think that's something that also came out in the whole Black Lives Matter protest, and then this idea that climate justice is also racial justice, and we should look at like what are the broader effects of the measures we take against climate action as well. So as a final question, a more personal question that you can respond to very briefly, in your opinion, what is the best climate action an individual can take?
The first answer on a very individual basis is to consume less. I think that is the most important, because even if you select your waste, it still increases the industry and causes emissions. So the key to that, I think, is on the one hand to decrease your consumption on an individual and on a collective level. And the other, since I've always been concerned about communities and building up bottom-up actions, I think it is really important to establish connections within the community, to reach out in the neighborhood and make joint initiatives, which are also, like as Aaron mentioned many times, there are class-based, like these initiatives for community gardens, or some kind of local initiatives like that. But I think I really believe in community action.
Very nice. And what about you, Aaron?
I think what is important is that to look at these local traditions, and many of the local traditions are in Eastern Europe are actually basically we can describe this as a late coming way to consumerism. And if we look back, not that long actually. So many of these issues which are now propagated as being incredibly clean and bio and I don't know what. I mean, they were still there, or they still exist, or are basically in the process of being destroyed. So this is basically local community markets. This is basically all these livelihood issues which we had before, which were because of shortage, not because of choice. They were basically that what now we would expect as being completely green. And this is, I think, like an interesting switch. And there is some parts of the degrowth people are talking increasingly about that looking at the gardening cultures of the around the dachas in Estonia, or they're looking at basically self recreational movements in and basically even probably environmentalism of the poor kind of movements which are important here, and this is, I think, something which is of course very difficult to handle in terms of this political systems which are and of course also the wishes of the people, which is much very much about like why shouldn't we live like I don't know, the Austrians and from the Hungarian perspective.
I think there's definitely a lot, like as you said, that we can learn from how we did things in the past. Like even if I look at my grandparents, they have a very different way of consuming things or more fixing things, where yeah, we're used to getting new things. So there's a lot of valuable things in there, as you said. Thanks a lot for joining me today. I think we learned quite a lot. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jana.
That's it for this episode. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to How Green Is Your Deal on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening. If you want to stay informed on Green Deal Net's activities, please go to greendealnet.eu and subscribe to the newsletter.